Good evening. Welcome to the Salieri Report. Today is November 13th, 2014. This is Catherine Austin Fitz. I'm talking to you from someplace in Arizona, headed on my way to Tucson this morning, then to Texas, and then back to Tennessee. I'm so excited. Well, I have to tell you, we had a gathering in California in last week's workshop, weekend's workshop, that was just remarkable. And we're working on a report, so we're going to report everything that we learned to you. We have a lot to digest. We're getting lots of different comments back in. But I think a few of the things I can say, the most important was we had 35 subscribers, and they loved meeting each other. I have never seen 35 people having more fun getting to meet and talk to some of the most fascinating people I've ever known. It was really a remarkable group of people. And there was one gentleman who stood up and said something like this. It's my words, not his. There are people who face the real deal, and then there are people who want to do something positive. And it's almost impossible to find people who are both. And I think the pure joy of meeting, 34 other people who really understood what was going on, wanted to understand what was going on, didn't want to suppress it, wanted to deal with reality, but also didn't want to dwell on it, wanted to do something positive, enjoy life, get something done. Just being in the room, I can't tell you how many people I spoke to who complain of being lonely, and yet I didn't see any lonely people in that room. They were quite jazzed and networking and talking and scheming. It was really wonderful. And the one thing I can tell you is when you get 35 people together who are that wonderful, things happen. So it was their interaction and delight in meeting each other that was the real joy. And I think the tremendous sense of not being alone at all. There's lots of other great people like you. Anyway, so tremendous thanks to everybody who put that on, to our great Ben Lizardi and Dr. Farrell and John Rappaport, who came in by Skype, and everyone who did a great job. It was really wonderful. And as I said, we'll have a report for you. And again, to all the people who've given us great feedback, thank you. So as I said, our subscribers are the most remarkable people I know. It's really a pleasure to do what I do. Two of the things that came out, and they'll be in the report, but what I heard again and again, and I almost wish we had been able to focus on this, you know, having learned what I've learned now, if I went back, we'd probably focus more on how do we get over the obstacles rather than our vision for 2020 for our individual lives. But the questions that kept coming up was, how do we filter people? How do we underwrite? How do we figure out who's who? And how do we find people like us and align with people like us? So there was a lot of sort of risk management when it came to find and networking with people. Then the question, how do we filter information? How do we figure out what's true and not? How do we make sure we're not tricked by disinformation? So I'm going to be doing a lot more thinking and talking about how we can do some great Salieri reports on those topics. New York, we're still working on shifting our luncheon to April. I've gotten some great emails from people in New York saying they'd love to meet each other. So I really am working and hoping that that comes off. Our theme tonight is the latest round of U.S.-China rebalancing kicks off. If you head to the blog, you'll see a commentary rebalancing the U.S.-China partnership. Let me just read it to you quickly. Consider this a flashing sign that says, pay attention, pay attention, pay attention. Understanding the evolution of the U.S.-China economic relationship now underway is essential for understanding the North American and Asian economies and their role in the global financial system. The best book for this, and I discovered in the workshop that a lot of people hadn't really heard the stress I'm trying to place on this, so I really want to emphasize it. Steve Roche's book, Unbalance, provides an enormously clear, coherent framework to understand the whole blizzard of news and announcements that we're watching. So if you want to get a great context, I think it's one of the best books of the year and certainly the best economics book of the year. So Steve Roche, Unbalanced, the link in the commentary is to our interview with him But if you really want to understand what's going on in the global economy, that book is one you want to read. Great statistics, great framework, great overview. But we see announcements. U.S. and China just agreed to a tariff-free technology trade deal, a climate accord. We have the links up on the blogs. Big one, and I talked about this when the Alibaba deal came down and talked for about the tit-for-tat. China opens doors to foreign investment in stocks. This is very, very important because if you look at the tremendous growth and role and importance of the equity markets globally, it's just going to keep going. And China doing this is a very important moment and a real signal that they're feeling more confident in what they're doing and in their position so that they can start to let foreign capital flow in more, you know, more deeply. There's a tsunami coming, and it's one of the things I came out of the workshop understanding was that many of our readers, many of our subscribers still don't feel the power of what's coming. And so I'm going to work on the wrap-up of really communicating this. If you look at what is happening in the emerging markets, there's a tsunami coming back. So I give the example of education. If someone in Outer Mongolia can link into Khan Academy and all the best websites and all the university curriculum that's being put up and be free to just get the best education in the world and not have to bother with Common Core curriculum and standardized testings and the growing horrible bureaucracy and disinformation that education, that teachers and principals are subjected to, that's a level of competition which is extraordinary because what it says is an American student has a 25,000 hour handicap, particularly if you include the cost of their time and paying off student loans. And frankly, that's a handicap they can't survive with. And so it's going to be very interesting to see what the slapback is because the competition coming this way is extraordinary and ruthless. Ditto with consumer economics. We're seeing as more and more goes online, just tremendous slapback. And one of the things Roche does a great job of describing is the imbalance between the benefits accruing to a U.S. consumer versus a Chinese consumer. That's going to get rebalanced. And so there's a real tsunami of feedback coming in a variety of different areas. And it's very hard to even imagine what this could look like, but it's going to be very strong. So I'm going to talk about it a lot during the wrap-up, and I want you to be thinking about that because some people are struggling with the amount of change that we've had, but I just keep stressing it's going to accelerate. And so I want everyone to be prepared and to have thought about how they sort of navigate the wave as it comes. Chinese train makers overtake European rivals is a link up on the blog. A very important article because it really focuses you on the culture of an economy that's growing and building. And there's so much in that vein we could be doing here, and yet we're not doing it. We're going to the negative. Again, the question is why? And if you look at the things we could be doing in infrastructure, if you take all the money we're spending on invading each other's privacy and controlling each other, what you could do in terms of infrastructure, other things is extraordinary. So the power of the positive is happening in those economies that are growing, and boy, we need an infusion of that. One of the things I've felt, I talked with a wonderful gentleman from New Zealand and another wonderful gentleman from Australia, and they said, come on down, and I was like, okay, I'm ready to go. So, you know, Asia is rocking and rolling, and it's time. If we can't get some of that going here, then we're going to have to sort of get out and go. Money and markets. Let me just give you a roundup of where we are. The S&P is now up 10% for the year. Emerging markets down about 1.5%, gold down 3.8%. The gold bugs have really had a tough year because gold started to come back up and now is back down in the soup. Bonds have been the big surprise of the year. TLT, the 20-year ETF for 20-year treasuries, is backed off from 20% up for the year down to 17% up for the year, but I just think that's a retracement, and I think the chances are it could really, you know, it could continue to surprise us for the rest of the year. The bond aggregate is up 3%, so it's really the long end that's moved, of course. Whoever thought interest rates would come down even more? I published a commentary on the blog this week called Watch the U.S. Dollar Index. It's very important to me that you read it or at least understand what I'm saying. So I'm going to read it, parts of it, tonight. So if you don't watch the U.S. Dollar Index, I recommend you start doing it. The U.S. dollar is an index of the value of the United States dollar expressed relative to a basket of foreign currencies, the euro, the yen, pound sterling, Canadian dollar, Swedish krona, and the Swiss franc. The index has been rising since the summer. It is correcting now. Given the strength of the rise, a short-term correction is to be expected. As the index rises, there is a correlated growth of financial newsletters predicting the imminent demise of the dollar. As the chorus grows, we are building towards a falling dollar shriek-o-meter. I'm writing this commentary in part a strong, clear message. Ignore the shriekers and pay attention to prices. Keep an eye on the U.S. dollar and related prices. Did you know that the 20-year U.S. Treasury ETF is up 20% this year? Gold is down 3%. Think about it. Where will gold be if the U.S. dollar index rises through 89 or higher, even if the U.S. dollar eventually returns to parity with the euro? A lot of things can happen over the next year. One of the things that can happen is a continued rise in the value of the U.S. dollar. The dollar carry trade has grown up as a result of G7 monetary policies, including the Fed's Q1, 2, and 3. More global debt has been borrowing cheap dollars. With the Fed's QE over, dollars are getting scarcer. If deflationary pressures continue, which is likely given a world struggling under a rising debt load, a lot of institutions could be chasing dollars. The U.S. can print dollars. The U.S. dollar supply is abundant for those who control the printing press. However, that supply is not abundant for the people, companies, and countries around the world that need dollars to pay interest and principal on U.S.-denominated debt and derivatives, or U.S. dollar-denominated debt and derivatives. They cannot print dollars. They have to spend their dollar reserves or earn dollars. Shrinking exports makes it harder to do so. Lower commodity prices make it harder to do so. If interest rates rise, borrowing more dollars gets harder to do. The forces that manage the slow burn just may enjoy a financial transfusion from the closing trap. Ditto the U.S. stock market. Ditto U.S. real estate and markets where foreigners with dollar reserves are buying. Among others, I recommend that you contemplate what a strong dollar scenario would do to your business and finances and be prepared to find the opportunities and manage the risks involved. While you do, focus on price, not shriek-o-meters. Watch the U.S. dollar index. I wrote this because I continue to hear different commentators. I'm going to write more about it before the end of the month. But a variety of newsletters and commentators saying the dollar's falling, the dollar's falling, the dollar's about to collapse, and it's done nothing but rise since the summer. And in fact, the rise has been too strong. It needs to back off, and it's been correcting this week. But be prepared, because the dollar could be even stronger. So please don't listen to the shrieker meters. I want you to follow price. And just remember, you need to prepare for this thing going many different ways, not just one way. So stop listening to people who have a certain position on the future. You need to be able to go whichever way it goes. QE1, 2, and 3 are over, and what we see is the ECB and the Japanese picking up the monetary stimulus bandwagon. I put a block up on the chart of European earnings as a percent of global earnings. It was very interesting. They started off the strong dollar policy period, 95, with 32% of global earnings. It peaked at a little bit above 40% in 2009, and is currently at 24%. Now, obviously, some of that is the swing in the euro, but that's a remarkable drop from 32% down to 22%. And it's an even more remarkable drop from 40% to 22%, which means that Europe is struggling, which means the sanctions over the Russian squabble or the Ukraine squabble with the Russians is making things very painful. And you wonder what it's going to do to the relationship between the euro and the Anglo-American alliance. So I think Europe is in for a tough winter, and it will be interesting to see what happens. It means the Ukraine situation is going to be particularly painful. One of the issues now is with Republicans winning the Senate, it means much more resistance to approving and passing the IMF reforms that the IMF has been trying to get us to do since 2010. Richard Haass, the head of the CFR, Council on Foreign Relations, just published in Foreign Affairs a new article called The Unraveling, How to Respond to a Disordered World. And you read it and you realize, oh my God, they're squabbling. The hotheads, you wonder what the hotheads are proposing to do now. I rarely find myself agreeing with the head of the CFR, but I thought there were some very good paragraphs here that are worth hearing. So let me just read a piece from the article, which is subscriber only, so I'm not putting it up on the blog. North America could once again become the world's economic engine, given its stable, prosperous, and open economy, its 470 million people, and its emerging energy self-sufficiency makes it strong. U.S. President Barack Obama was recently quoted as brushing off concerns that things are falling apart, noting that the world has always been messy, and that what is going on today is not something that is comparable to the challenges we faced during the Cold War. Such sanguinity is misplaced, however, as today's world is messier thanks to the emergence of a greater number of meaningful actors and a lack of overlapping interests or mechanisms to constrain the capacity or moderate the behavior of the most radical ones. Indeed, with U.S. hegemony waning, but no successor waiting to pick up the baton, the likeliest future is one in which the current international system gives way to a disorderly one with larger number of power centers acting with an increasing autonomy, paying less heed to U.S. interests and preferences. This will cause new problems, even as it makes existing ones more difficult to solve. In short, the post-Cold World order is unraveling, and will not be, while not perfect, it will be missed. He doesn't mention, I think, that one of the reasons the post-Cold War order is unraveling is because lawlessness on the part of a number of players, including the United States. So if we want law, then we have to practice it. We can't just pontificate about it. But I thought that a very, for the head of the Council of Foreign Relations to declare the New World Order, quote-unquote, the unraveling, I thought that was very interesting. Space race just keeps going. European spacecraft could find 70,000 new alien worlds. Article from Space up on the blog. It's the European Space Agency has something called the Gaia mission, which is looking to map and find distant worlds. So I'll be talking about the new movie Interstellar, but you also makes you wonder whether we're looking for new planets to live on. Big to do, the European Space Agency has landed its Rosetta satellite, which is out wandering the universe, has landed a robot on a comet, and a big production watching it. I'm going to put up one of the things they did was put up the sort of mapping of the sounds of the comet. It's quite interesting. But this is quite an accomplishment, and it just shows you there is a lot going on in space. Of course, the private space companies have had quite a setback with one of the rocket crashes and the Virgin test plane crashing. So the private space companies have taken quite a hit recently, and it makes you wonder, who is it who wants to make sure that private space commercialization doesn't go too fast? At the workshop, Dr. Farrell made a wonderful comment where he said, because of course the private space companies want to fund their early efforts with space tourism. And Joseph said, you know, I just don't think that the powers that be want rich people going up there and seeing what's going on around. Very astute point. Post-election rock and roll in Washington, we're seeing it. Obama comes out with a new proposal turning the internet into a utility with more government control. One of our subscribers made an astute comment. Let me just read it. It's up on the blog. At the birth of radio, anyone could broadcast at any power, anywhere, expressing anything, put under regulation by the FCC, ostensibly because radio signals were overlapping and interfering with each other. Content was also restricted, and radio station ownership became an invitation-only community. Television was put under the FCC's control for similar reason and with the same results, limiting content while ownership became exclusively a game for big money. I've always believed that the internet connection would be treated as an utility, but I was surprised to read, according to Martin Armstrong, calling the internet a utility would be the vehicle for FCC regulation of standards and content also. The government wants one more dangerous means of free expression to be quietly muzzled, just like all the preceding revolutionary opportunities to spread idea. Nothing is what it seems, I guess. If you haven't read Tim Wu's great book, The Master Switch, it's what it's all about, that as soon as a new technology comes out, lots of innovation, lots of creativity, it looks like freedom is increasing, and then wham, it gets pulled back into more central control. It's a remarkable description. I did post a link to Martin Armstrong's comment on the president's proposal. I've been looking for a very good analysis of the details of the proposal, and I really don't understand it yet, so I'm going to reserve comment and see what the Electronic Freedom Foundation and others say. As you heard me say the last time I spoke with you, I came through the election, and by the election day, if anybody said the word one more time, Ebola, I would just scream. And of course, I got wonderful feedback on our little commentary on the Ebola shriek-o-meter and my choice of a shocking picture. I don't normally do shocking pictures, but I was so frustrated to see Bloomberg and the Wall Street Journal for 2 weeks straight just be Ebola, 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 Ebola. And then, of course, the day after the election, it's on the seventh page. It doesn't exist. But just when you thought you were safe to go back in the water again, today on Google, at the top of Google, if you did a search, came up this little thing. You could click on it, help fight Ebola. For every dollar you give, Google will give $2. SEC says they're undertaking a comprehensive U.S. stock market review. That's interesting. And I think part of their concern is the sense that people think there's a small handful of players are getting a rigged deal. We'll see what that's about. But for the SEC to do a comprehensive review of the U.S. stock market, that's a big deal. We have a new attorney general, Loretta Lynch, who is the Brooklyn federal prosecutor. And you take a look at her background, you wonder how much she knows about the black budget. This could be a very interesting education. Our producer today said, well, she's only going to be there for 2 years. Anyway, CERN discovery could be Higgs, could be another particle. So we see CERN coming out and waving, and you think wavering on what they've done so far, and you wonder what in the world is going on there. But there seems to be a little multiple personality. Then Alex Jones put something up on the secret features hidden in your smart TV. Many people believe the smart TVs have a two-way capacity. You can see whatever you're watching, and they can see you. And he put up a little video that shows what it looks like from the other side. So take it for what you want. It's in wildcards. Student massacres in Mexico have resulted in some very fierce protests. 43 students have been, quote-unquote, disappeared. It looks like they were massacred by the cartels after the government's turned them over. This is one of those situations, and we're seeing it all around the world, where the pushback, people are getting really fed up with having a planet that's run by organized crime. And the pushback is coming, and this is an example where the pushback is fierce, because once people realize, look, you know, this is not, there's nothing to be reasonable about. What you guys are doing is killing people, or, you know, whether you're doing it by turning them over to drug cartels or sticking vaccines in their arms. So the pushback is getting fierce. Another great example of the pushback is Mendocino County, California declares independence from the federal government. Everything within the county borders is under the jurisdiction of the county, and the federal government is, you know, clearly behind it. They're saying it's not just the sheriff, it's the whole county leadership. So they've written a declaration of independence, and there you are. So it'll be interesting to see what the legal their feedback is. But I think they're tired of the local marijuana growers being targeted and rounded up and thrown in the hoosegow. I had a wonderful opportunity to speak to some high school kids this yesterday. I think I was probably a little bit too blunt, but one of the things you could tell is they're terrified. How are they going to get a college education, and how are they going to get a good education, and without getting trapped by student loans? So I put up on the blog a little commentary on the top 16 crowdfunding sites for college and education costs, as well as some links for some great articles and creative ways of financing education. We had a great talk about different ways of rethinking how you do your college and phase your work versus college and the way you organize your curriculum and your time. Some more creative ways to get through college without taking out student loans. Our hero today is, not surprisingly, a group of campesinos, including labor and farmers in Guatemala, who managed to get the Guatemalan legislature decree 2014, commonly referred to as the Monsanto Law, repealed. It can be done. The pushback is here. Ask Catherine. I've been a fan ever since I heard you tell your story several years ago. You're one of a handful of people that I go to for information these days. You mentioned in one of your recent discussions that there were some powerful community building organizing going on in some parts of the world. I believe you mentioned, and he mentioned some place. I sent some links, and I'll do a blog post and put some more up. One of the things that is really important, if you're interested in food, you definitely want to try and find the Weston Price groups in your area. I find they're the sort of go-to network around the country if you're interested in food, and that's a great way to start. They're also very positive people. Are you planning anything in the Northeast or New York City? Yep, you bet. Stay tuned for what we do in April. Dear Catherine, thanks so much for all you do. This is somebody from New York asking to get together. We will really do that in April, I promise. My mother has an IRA valued in cash with J.P. Morgan Chase. Considering the current legal issues with J.P. Morgan Chase, what would be a safe alternative institution for where she deposits her IRA account? Let's divide sort of our political feelings from financial security. There's nothing going on with the current legal issues that I would anticipate would impact J.P. Morgan Chase's ability to be a financially secure institution for an IRA. That's not to say that I would ever open a bank account there. But if you look at the dependency of the U.S. government and its allies on the J.P. Morgan Chase infrastructure, it's very hard to imagine J.P. Morgan Chase going down unless the U.S. government was also going down. And I can certainly imagine very many scenarios when the U.S. government would go down and J.P. Morgan Chase would not. So I really think that as a practical matter, if security is the only issue, I just think as a practical matter, J.P. Morgan Chase is not a problem. I do think because of the politics around J.P. Morgan Chase and some of the shenanigans they've engaged in, if you said to me, is that the number one most secure IRA account, I would say no, there are other institutions which I think are better. But I really don't think that you need to worry about those current legal issues impairing existing financial security. Hi, Catherine. Hearing more talk about bail-ins, what are your current thoughts? Are we closer to that being a reality? Would it be wise to move cash balances to investment accounts, or would there be any would there be any more protected there? I do think bail-ins are coming. I don't think it's going to jeopardize the FDIC system unless they do a taxation of the kind that the folks at the IMF have talked about occasionally. I think if you're in a sound bank in this country and you stay within the FDIC limits, you won't have any problem, including if you stay in the FDIC limits in your investment bank account, which a lot of the brokerage firms, you can take your 250 limit up to much higher. But I do think you're going to see more and more shifting to real assets, whether owning a piece of real estate or a coin like gold or silver, or, you know, real assets through owning equity in a company that has real assets and real operations and can generate a cash flow. So I do think it's going to push us more towards equity and sort of hard assets. And but I don't think it's a 2014 issue. I think bail-ins are going to be more of a 2015 issue. So I'll make sure I address it during the wrap-up. But I would not worry so long as you're in a sound institution and within FDIC limits. But again, balance, 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 balance. Anything can happen. And so we need, even if I think bail-ins affecting an FDIC deposit, it's a very small position right now. Anything can happen. So obviously you don't want to bet the ranch and keep everything in the banks. Let's go to the movies. I have the pleasure of, thanks to one of you who recommended that I get over and see it quickly, I went after the workshop on Sunday afternoon to see Christopher Nolan's new science fiction blockbuster, Interstellar. Now, you have to remember when I talk about this, I love space. I love the, you know, I'm one of those people who wants to get in a space elevator. I want to fly to Mars. I want to do all those things. So I love space movies. But I have to tell you, this one is wonderful. It was... it's a story of a group of space travelers who travel through a wormhole in search of a new habitable planet. As I said, it means the, you know, I look at what the Gaia mission is doing to sort of map out all the, you know, what's going on in the universe, and it kind of makes you wonder. It was written by Nolan and his brother, Jonathan Nolan, and it was based on the work of a theoretical physicist, Kip Thorne, whose work inspired the film. He acted as a scientific consultant and executive producer. And in the blog post on the blog, I put up instead of putting up a trailer, I put up their interview with Jonathan, Christopher, and Kip Thorne about the challenges of trying to integrate the science in a way with great integrity into the film, and how you represented graphically a lot of these phenomena, including a black hole. It's absolutely fascinating. You have to, before you see the movie, you have to see that interview, because it does a great job of introducing it. And it's very long, and it's unbelievably beautiful in terms of looking at the stars, you know, looking at the planets. It's really, graphically, it's an extraordinary accomplishment. Some of the reviews have been negative because it's more realistic in many parts than it is a entertaining movie. So I love that, because I love the theater of it, and I love the teeing up of a lot of the serious issues and display of some of the science. And some of the science gets very out there. So as somebody who's regularly listening to Coast to Coast, I'm used to some of the out there stuff, but you know, some of the physics gets very, you know, mind-stretching. Anyway, it's very special. I enjoyed it tremendously. I recommend it tremendously. But when you listen to that recommendation, you have to remember I love space movies. Our interview today, talk about a blockbuster, our interview today is with Chuck Gibson, and let me just step back and make sure you understand the power of what is happening right now, because we are going through a process which has never happened before, and once it's over, it will never happen again, and that is the securitization of everything on the planet. We started the 90s with the float on the world exchanges at $6 trillion. It's now at $70 trillion. That's more than a multiple of 10 times. So it is increased enormously, and we are going into a world where it's going to be, you pick a number out of a hat, 300 trillion. I don't know, but it's extraordinary. And so the equity markets this is an unprecedented time to be, as I said, an investment advisor or an investor and looking at what's happening in the equity markets. So I wanted to focus this time on what is happening in the investment world, in the equity markets, related to this shift from 2.0 and 3.0. So instead of focusing on the systems which are dying, say, okay, what's being born? What's growing? Where's the reinvestment of the money that's been shifted out going into? So this was really looking at Global 3.0 from the equity investor's point of view. When we prepared it, what we realized is, oh my God, looking at the trends is just going to take way too long. And so in the third quarter wrap-up, I introduced the trends and prepared a comic book so that when Chuck and I went through and talked about the different areas, we could do it with that already done. And so we run through those areas and talk, give you different examples of the kinds of companies that are sort of succeeding in that environment and what it looks like, how to think about it. And then we go into the different risk issues and the implications to your investment strategy, because there's certain fundamental rules that are very important to follow in this environment. And you need to understand them and think about them. And I'm very concerned about these because I keep bumping into clients and investors and readers who have been persuaded by the shriek-o-meters to break these rules. And they're really rules you need to understand and know about. Chuck prepared a whole series of graphs and charts that, again, really give you a strategic viewpoint. So this one is a big one. It's got a lot of content. But I think to really understand the shift that's going on in the economy, it's very, very important. Remember, this is unprecedented. So if we're at 70 trillion now, you know, we're going to be at something much bigger, and the U.S. is going to be a smaller percentage of the total outstanding. So globalization is going to continue to proceed, and you need to really see the opportunity for you in that. Okay, that's it for this evening. In closing, we have a great one coming up, the oil card with Jim Norman, one of my favorite people to get on the Solari Report. I think this is his fourth time up. Given what's going on in the energy world with a crashing oil price, wow, is it down. And the sort of the game with Putin and what's happening in the whole sort of Russian situation. The question is the oil card back in real, with a real fury? So he's a perfect guy to get on. Alan Phillips is back on November 27th, vaccine exemptions, very, very important area, very complex area. And this is the third time Alan has joined us, but because of the Ebola shriek-o-meter, I'm very concerned about what might be next in the vaccine area. And we continue to see real pressure to close off exemptions. So I wanted to make sure you had access to that. And finally, December 4th, year-end tax planning with Patty Kemmerer. This one's going to be good news while there's still time to do something about it. So until November 20th with Jim Norman on the oil card, please remember, don't worry about whether or not there is a conspiracy. If you're not in a conspiracy, then you need to start one. Ladies and gentlemen, good night and good luck.